Welcome, everyone, to our podcast, All Things Marketing and Education. I'm Ilana Leone, and I've devoted my entire career to helping education brands build their brand awareness, engagement, and ultimately grow their lead. Every week, my guests, who range from educators to edtech entrepreneurs to experts in the field, will all share tips, strategies, and insights in either social media, content marketing, and community building. I'm so excited to be your guide to help transform your marketing efforts into something that's truly authentic and consistently provides value for your audience. Enjoy. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of All Things Marketing and Education. This week, I was truly blessed to sit down with Christina Ishmael. She's now an education strategic advisor of her own shop, Ishmael Consulting. But Christina has formerly served in the classroom at the state level and at the national level. Most recently, many of you may know her as the deputy director of the Office of Ed Tech. So given she's been working at the local level, in classrooms, at the state level, at the federal level, she'll get into all the nooks and crannies of who she was, where she served. It gives her such a unique perspective on so many things. But in this episode, we specifically talk about the National EdTech Plan. Christina, she will not brag about this, but she was instrumental in creation of the National EdTech Plan. There were certainly what I call the X-Men behind the National EdTech Plan, but she was one of the driving forces of gathering all these beautiful experts together. So because of this on-the-ground experience she had, she was really able to give us the good stuff about the National EdTech Plan. So we talk about what it is, we talk about how you can use it, whether you're an educator, an education administrator, or an EdTech professional, and we chat about what's uniquely different about this plan from other previous versions. Many of you have seen the other versions and say, okay, why do I need to pay attention to this? What's in it for me? How can I use it? Christina gets into all of that, which is awesome. And stay tuned at the end where I ask her one of the hardest questions and just threw a bomb at her and said, so, you know, how do you see this adapting for the next plan? And really the next planned National EdTech Plan, I believe, is in 2030. So I was pretty much asking her to be a fortune teller and say, how do you see this plan evolving to be ready for the unique needs of our students and our educators and everyone around in 2030? So she has some good things to say about that as well. I love this conversation so, so much. I hope it makes you smile. I hope it makes you laugh as much as Christina and I did in this episode. So please enjoy. Oh my gosh. Welcome to the show, Christina. I'm so excited to have you on my podcast. This is,
and I'm so excited to be here.
Say it's a dream come true. Post or pre-show, I was saying I was scared to talk. I know we're friends, but I know how busy you are. So I appreciate you coming on the show. And today we're going to be talking about the National EdTech Plan, which I don't say that phrase without thinking of your name and your influence in it. So I couldn't think of a more.
Thank you.
Or appropriate guests to talk about it. We're going to talk about what it is, why do we even have it, what's its evolution, what's different, and then how, if you're an ed tech leader, you can use it. And if even you're an ed tech, how do we use this to navigate what's going on in the industry, in the field? So welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, all right. High level, I think sometimes people go, gosh, you know, how does our government support public K-12 education and higher ed education? And I think sometimes people go, whoa, I never heard of the Office of Ed Tech. Do you want to talk on a high level of what the Office of Ed Tech is and maybe how it relates structurally to the government?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So obviously the U.S. Department of Education is its own agency within the federal government. It was actually not established until really like the mid-60s. It used to be with other kind of entities. And so then it kind of separated out on its own. And there are a variety of offices that are within the department, including the Office of EdTech that was established by Congress, shockingly, in 1996, who I guess had the foresight to think that technology was going to have an impact in education. And so the main charge of that, the very, like from 1996, was we need a national kind of landscape or a plan of thinking how technology will come into education. And that was the main charge of the office from the very beginning. Expanding all of the things that have happened since then, but there have been 5 versions of the National EdTech Plan since then. And the most recent one was in 2016 with a few updates in 2017. And then the one that was just released in January of 2024, which I had the pleasure and honor to help oversee during my tenure at the department.
Yeah. So helpful structurally, because I'm like, I know you all, and I was at Edutopia. It was nice to interact and collaborate with the leaders and understand how we can best support them and their efforts. But I felt like you all were like this not as well known, just roll up your sleeves, startup style department, just doing awesome things. And so I wanted to start out just people, hey, everyone, there is an Office of EdTech.
There is
lots of amazing things. And we're not even talking about the other resources, like your artificial intelligence guide was awesome. So we'll put all of these links to the National EdTech Plan, the AI, was it the guide, or are you calling it a toolkit or a guide?
Yeah.
We'll put that in the show notes as well and listen to the end podcast. Cool. We'll drop the URL where you can go. But you talked about the National EdTech Plan, and I kind of want to pause and ask like a high level, because you said there's lots of different revisions and, you know, that it started on a high level. If was this like, what's the magic wand it was trying to do of like, okay, is it get all the districts on the same page or put our stamp on what we think is right or just surface up research? Like on a very layman's term, you got me 30 seconds in a bar. What is the National EdTech Plan?
A little different than an elevator pitch, right? Oh, goodness. So it is the flagship publication that comes out of the Office of EdTech. And it really did start as what you mentioned, kind of surfacing the existing research and the research for the past couple of years, as well as this, like what is happening in classrooms? What are some of those bright spots that we're seeing that you could help uplift that? And then let folks know like how other school districts are integrating technology to really kind of impact teaching and learning. And so that's how it started. There have been, again, 5 versions so far. This is the 6th version. This one feels a little bit different already. So there has been kind of that focus, I think, more on the research and more on the kind of hypotheticals. This one feels much more actionable, if you ask me. Kind of with that call to action and then being able to actually take it and then implement it in your respective districts or states for that matter.
And for those of you going, okay, I've heard of this plan, know that it is free, it's accessible. We'll put it in the show notes or you can just Google it. The idea is to surface up the research, the trends, really look critically on what are our biggest challenges in K-12.
Yes.
And I know I'm going to foreshadow what's different and you're going to get into it even more. But I love how it makes it a lot more inclusive this time.
I love that you noticed that.
Yeah. And I know, because I talked to a lot of the UDL folks that you one of the things, Christina, you haven't mentioned is that, I would think I was talking to Julia and she was saying that she listed all the partners and experts that went into this. So this is not just the Office of EdTech creating this.
I
was like, you truly gathered the X-Men of education.
Yeah.
Right? And anyone who was an expert in anything, you brought in and they all weighed in on it. So
yes,
I want to know how much effort and expertise went into this.
Yeah. In fact, the timeline is also really interesting, I think, just to even think about. It's similar to if you think about kind of textbooks or instructional materials in classrooms. It's on a cyclical basis that people replace those or upgrade those. It's every 5, 6, 7 years, or if there's money for it. I mean, I've worked with school districts that have not upgraded in well over 20 years. So don't think that that's universal, you know, across all districts, but it really is that. And so this was the moment for this 2024 version to look at things that obviously had changed since 2017. And then to also help kind of ease some fears about technology. Post-lockdown, our biggest fear was that people were going to come back into in-person learning and put all the devices away. I'm still hearing stories about this. And that makes me incredibly nervous because we know that we can do good things with technology. And so It is a little bit different as far as the call to action and calling out specific divides. The team that helps write this, I mean, this has been a project well over 18 months since it really started. It started with the research. You know, Zach Chase at the Office of EdTech was the one that was leading all of this work and still continues to lead this work. And he spent hours and hours just reading, trying to boost up his background knowledge and his schema for the things that had changed since the last time he'd actually been in the office and helped write the previous version. And consultations with experts, like you mentioned, there is a formal technical working group that gets together with representation from higher education, from K-12, from research, from practitioners, a wide, wide variety. It's also very gender inclusive as well as racially representative. Like it covered all of the bases, but also like recognizing there is deep expertise in the field and that they could contribute their expertise to this flagship publication. There were plenty of listening sessions. There were surveys that went out. So when you talk about building policy in general, there's always that little bullet point that was like, you know, include all of your stakeholders. And that was a huge part, you know, part of this for us. It's harder on a national level when there are 14,000 public school districts, 50 plus kind of state agencies, plus the territories and all of that to make sure that there is representation. But this one feels like it really does represent the country. And so the current challenges that we're facing, the efforts and the action that can be taken to reach every single learner.
Yeah. And so just special kudos for you for really taking that check mark of include the stakeholders and actually doing it in a comprehensive way, because in education, I think sometimes we get used to people not including each other, right? And just saying, here, no, this is the way we approach it. And people might have that idea of the government of like, oh, no, this is the way they want it to tell us.
Yep.
And that is the exact opposite of what this plan was. If you had so many stakeholders come in and like, just look at your like, is it a contribution area on the page? It
was the acknowledgement. Yes. Yes. So many people. So.
Are you struggling to find the time you need to strategically plan for content in social media? Are you feeling overwhelmed by the sheer volume of events and holidays relevant to education stakeholders? Look no further than Leone Consulting Group's first ever EdTech Marketers 2024 Planner Extended Edition. Designed to streamline your content planning process, the Extended Planner has templates, strategies, editable calendars, and more to help turn your plans into actions and help you save time planning content. Stop wasting time and start maximizing your marketing efforts today. Purchase our planner for just $3.99 now by clicking the link in the episode description or by visiting leoneconsultinggroup.com/2024. Happy planning.
Lots of experts went into this. Let's talk at a high level. What do you love about this plan? And what do you think is critically different about this plan?
Yeah. So in previous versions, they've really looked at kind of different domains within teaching and learning and how technology impacts that, whether it's teaching and learning, assessment. These are the five domains from the most recent one, leadership and infrastructure. This one really kind of moves away from domain specific, and it calls out the divides that we see across the country. And it started with the digital access divide, knowing that pre-pandemic we had with President Obama's Connect Ed initiative, there was an increase from 33% of school districts, all 14,000, you know, public school districts, from 33% of those districts in 2012 that had high-speed, reliable internet to 99.9% by 2018. So like, that's significant. Like, let's celebrate that. Then the pandemic hits. And then we start to get numbers that are varied depending on the source. This was obviously a hot point at the beginning of the pandemic because we didn't have the most accurate data to tell us how many households actually had access to reliable high-speed internet. And so of the X amount of households, there was an estimate most often that we use between 16 and 17 million households with K-12 students that didn't have reliable high-speed internet. That's significant. And then we also know that not every school district is one-to-one with any sort of devices. So at the beginning, people were sending home paper packets, all of these types of things, just for that continuity of learning, to let people know that we're still in it together, we still care about you, all of these things. But that access divide became very, very apparent during lockdown and during quarantine. And it's not just reliable high-speed internet and devices. It's also accessibility of the instructional materials. We had seen a huge kind of switch to digital materials, whether they were from traditional publishing companies, whether they were openly licensed, like open educational resources. They were not always accessible to every student. So any sort of universal design for learning that we were including in that was not always there. And so we had to account for all of those pieces when it comes to access. Then in the 2017 version, it called out how we want to see technology used in an active way. And that is students that are creating and not just simply consuming passively. And we know the research shows in a lot of these cases, we put kids on a computer for an intervention or for remediation, and they're sitting there passively consuming that information. They're on X tool for X amount of minutes, and then they rotate through or whatever the case may be. And so we wanted to figure out how we get from talking about this digital access divide, we know that there needs to be an increase there, to get to the point where there is this increase in digital use divide, this active use of technology. So what was missing in the middle? Digital design divide. And it is talking about giving time and professional learning and ongoing coaching. It's not a one-stop kind of PD to teachers and educators to help them understand what is universal design for learning? What do these types of unique learning opportunities look like so that you can create that active use of technology? So that's how the three divides kind of came to be. Knowing that this was missing in the middle, we continue to talk about professional learning. I remember doing my action research in Nebraska in 2012, and I was surveying across the entire state of Nebraska if we had enough access to professional learning around EdTech integration. Nope. 12 years later, we're still in that same space. And so we know that technology is so powerful when used the right way and actively used with students to create and to apply their learning. And so we still need to focus on that. I think the other thing to say whenever I mentioned universal design for learning is that that's actually been in statute since 2015 through the Every Student Succeeds Act, which is ESSA. And that is like the underlying thing that we use for education to help us know like what we need to do to stay accredited as a school district, to help us receive funding. And we've had universal design on the books since 2015. It's been around for 40 years, but on the books since 2015. And I would still have conversations with district leaders, teachers that had no clue what UDL was. And so we really wanted to make sure that we call that out as part of the overall digital design divide, saying when you design for the margins, when you design for students with disabilities or your multilingual learners, you're designing for everyone. They get to benefit from that. And so that's how the three divides kind of shape out in this new version. And it feels, again, much more actionable of like, oh, we can work on these three divides simultaneously and then work towards improving our overall teaching and learning.
Yeah. And what you're doing is, I feel like because you have so many people looking at this critically and looking at the last plan and looking at the trends that affect the plans, you can look at a high level and say, what are the biggest things truly affecting education? And you shouldn't just be myopic and look at one, right? It's like removing all of these together. And what did we learn from the pandemic, right? Because there's a lot of haters out there that say, gosh, we got everyone one-to-one and then we just rolled back. There was a lot of learning that happened. And yes, have we fallen back a little bit? Sure. But you are able to say, here are the priorities. Here's how you can keep them a priority and move them all in lockstep. And that's something I think as a school leader or an ed tech person, we wouldn't have the time to really identify the trend on a high level, give you the research. And then there's some actionable things and resources that you can use. So when you're talking, I'm like, oh yeah, that bubble just got bigger because of families now. And we were just so focused on schools for a while.
I know. For so long.
Giving me a little acid reflux talking about it. I'm like, oh gosh, it got bigger and it's harder. And you know,
it is harder. And then you look at like terrain and geography and who has access and who doesn't have access. And that also kind of goes back to the digital equity work that the office did as well. You know, digital redlining, that's also a thing that no one was really talking about before all of this, where we were hearing from districts in urban cities and urban locations where, like, one side of the street, their students had access to some form of high-speed internet. And then across the street, there's nothing. And just, like, for a full block, like, there was just this blank, no coverage whatsoever. And knowing that that's a reality for a lot of households is kind of terrifying, just knowing that that even exists. And then how do you really start to think about addressing that from a school district perspective? And I'm not saying that the onus is completely on the school district by any means, but even being able to identify that is like the first step. And then how do we kind of bring all of that forward?
Yeah. And I think just on a personal note, I would say that I'm so proud of having people like you being able to have such a significant part in a plan like this, because I know you champion for that. I know that you critically and passionately care about equity issues, about who's not showing up, who doesn't have that access. Yeah. And sometimes I feel like we have stereotypes of the government going, oh, well, maybe that's the majority. It's the easiest way path. Let's move forward.
Yeah.
But what I knew from you personally, and I see in the plan, is every single person matters, and let's design a plan, even if it's harder to understand sometimes.
Yeah.
And there's another thing you have to be worried about. I just applaud you personally for always being that champion. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I've learned a lot from my time in state government as well as federal government and colleagues that this really matters. And so to be able to even be that champion means a lot to me.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about the plan, what's different in the plan. If you are a school leader listening, if you are an education advocate of any kind, if you're a teacher that's just super interested in this, how would you ideally like them to read and just say, okay, here's how I can implement it or learn from it? Are there specific things that you'd like to point out in the plan that they can take advantage of?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most proud kind of pieces of this whole thing is that there is an example from every single state as well as every single territory. And that again goes back to inclusion and representation, because we know that it means a lot for folks to see their state in a national kind of publication. And so to look for those examples, they're all in the appendices. So it's not like you even have to read through the actual document itself. Of course, that is encouraged. But to go in there and look for your state example, I think is even just one way to start. There's also an executive summary. So if you just want to kind of scratch the surface with it, the executive summary certainly helps with that. And then digging in from there, being able to talk about the three divides is the first step. And then being able to share that with others, because when I talk about the divides, especially with classroom teachers, they're like, oh yeah, we see this every day. Like, yeah, I know. District leaders don't always do this. So are you telling your district leaders this? And so being able to advocate for that is actually really important as well.
Yeah, I see this almost as a checklist, like accountability gut check too, of like, are we thinking and talking about these things critically? You know, when we're having school board meetings, are these things coming up? And, you know, so that's really helpful. If you're an educator listening, know that if you see it, you know, your own district or something that's similar state level, like Christina's talking about, be that advocate and reach out and let's have that conversation to make sure that these are the high level issues that will not necessarily make or break us. We need to learn forward. We need to fail forward through them.
Fail forward. 100%.
Yes. And if we're not talking about them, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting that you said like sharing, because that's, I have had a couple of presentations recently. Most recently, I was thinking of the University of Florida. I was there for a policy summit. So it was the Future of Florida Summit. This was 2 weekends ago. And they asked me like, how do you first get started in education policy? And I was like, well, I have a very unique path and happy to talk more about that. But from the classroom teacher to any sort of, you know, person in our community, go to school board meetings. They matter. They are public meetings. They matter because they are the ones that are making the decisions about what is happening in the classrooms. A lot of folks still don't understand that. And we elect these positions. We elect these people to sit in these places and make the decisions that will then impact our children in classes. So it starts at that community level and this local school board level. But then my experience also at the state level was like, oh, guess what? There's a state board of education. That's also a public meeting. And that is where a lot of people need to also be there to share in public comment, to share through testimony. They hear the great things that are happening, because what is happening in most of those meetings is all the bad stuff. It's all the negative stuff. It's all of the very, like, it's very partisan. We had folks that would show up with like anti-Common Core badges. And like, it's a very real thing. And they were most likely in a place where they were retired and had more of the flexibility to be able to do that rather than a classroom teacher. But it's so important that we're making sure that there's representation at these meetings as well. We need sane people at these meetings, and that would be very helpful.
Yes. I think when you talk about school board meetings in particular and all of these meetings, they are public record. And if you are an ed tech company and you're like, gosh, you know, I want to get into so-and-so district, I wonder what they care about most. Guess what? You can find those meeting notes. And you know, from a strategic perspective, you want to make sure ed tech is being as value as possible and really listening and doing your homework on your prospective schools and districts, right? And shout out, I'll put a resource in our show notes to Burbio from the EdTech scene, but they provide a lot of data around school board meetings. And like for the data nerd in me, like they can even tag what percentage of conversations nationally on school boards are happening around XR technology, for example. Wow. So I think it's
that's awesome. That's super helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Because then you can kind of understand of how do you as EdTech become a partner in helping with these major challenges that the EdTech plan has surfaced up too. Like we're not just vendors here.
Absolutely.
We're trying to figure out how to navigate the system too.
Yes. Yes. You can also, I mean, because of the public records, you can also look at the procurement side of this. I know that that is like the least sexy thing to talk about is procurement, but you can also see how people are investing the money that they do have at the district level and at the state level for that matter. But at the district level, what are they investing in? Again, back to your, what are the priorities? What do they care about? Because if they're investing X amount of dollars for a remediation program, does that mean that there are other ways that would also meet the needs of these types of learners that may cost less, or we may have a better ed tech solution for X? And so that is super helpful as well.
Yes. And those of you listening, pause, rewind, and repeat what Christina just said. Super important. Because it's not sexy procurement, but that is the number way, not even a dotted line, it's a solid line to your revenue success and your sustainability as an ed tech company. So speaking of ed tech, if I'm an ed tech company and I'm reading this plan, how would you ideally like me to use this resource and put it hopefully into action?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it goes back to looking at the three divides, seeing if your tool or your ed tech company helps with one of those problems, honestly. Can it provide a solution to the access divide, to the design divide, or to the use divide? I mean, if you can't answer yes to any of those, that's a problem. But hopefully there's a yes to one of those. But just seeing how it aligns to the plan itself, and then how can you take advantage of that? Going out and having conversations and leading with, hey, have you read the National Ed Tech Plan? Because the three divides that it discusses, we meet the needs for 1, 2, 3 divides. And that's an important piece in all of this procurement. And then you get into the evidence-based decision-making as well for ed tech companies. If they have, this goes back to ESSA again in 2015, schools are supposed to be making decisions around curriculum, around ed tech tools, you name it, that they are procuring based off of evidence and research. Now, ed tech has always been a hard one. I will say that because you can't do your traditional randomized control trials with ed tech with fidelity like you can other things. Curriculum that stays stagnant, that is not dynamic, that, you know, that stays. If I go to do a 2 to 3 year research study on an ed tech tool, that's going to change. There's going to be like versions 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in that time. And so there is an easy entry point for ed tech tools in particular, creating a logic model and then getting that first tier, which is actually tier 4. It's a theory of change. And if you can go in and say, hey, we believe that using our ed tech tool will help X, then that level of evidence or that tier, you can also go into the same conversations and say, hey, we also meet ESSA tier 4 with our ed tech tool. And so we would love to talk about partnering with you to help increase overall achievement or growth in your school district. And so it's bringing both of those together. So we know that we need to pick tools that are actually research-based and are showing their effectiveness and their efficacy with looking at the three divides from the national ed tech.
Yes. And I love how you kind of said, let's start out with, hey, we meet two out of the three of the challenges within the tech plan. By the way, we also are aligned with what your school board cares about and what your strategic plan says are your priorities for the district. Boom, boom. And here's some evidence around it. And then maybe there are practices around a district that looks and feels like you, right? So there's your recipe, but really approaching it as a thought partner and someone who truly cares and listens into the challenges. Like, we have deep rooted challenges that aren't going to go away any time soon in ed tech, but it's helpful to listen as much as possible and really come from, there's some really great resources like the National Ed Tech Plan that we can leverage and help inform how we position our messaging going forward.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we talked about how school leaders can use it. We've talked about how ed tech can jump in and use it. And those are really tactical, inspirational, and I'll try to summarize that in the show notes for all of you that are jogging or walking your dog right now as well. Then when you were talking about logic models, theories of change, you were speaking my love language there. And we've had three guests on our show, so I will put them in the show notes for anyone that says, what's a theory of change? What's a logic model? But Jason Alton-Torres is somebody that talked about how you can do it in a very cheap, bootstrapped way. Katie Budi-Odarno as well. Yeah. And Shelby Danks. So we had three people on all about evaluation. So I'll put that in the show notes as well.
Great.
Question to wrap this all up, because you've given so much helpful information about something that I think when people think about the National Ed Tech Plan, they're like, oh, I just don't know where to start. And you've really demystified it. But if you were tasked with updating this in the future, because it came out, and as soon as it came out, it's already expired, right? There's certain things.
I know.
Right? And that's the thing, in the world of social media too. I was just looking at something. I'm like, TikTok's no longer serving up 110% of their, things like that is.
Yeah, of course. Everything changes.
What are some things, gut-wise, you're like, I think the future of the plan, maybe at this point in time, should also include X or Y?
It's a really great question.
That's a hard one. Yeah.
It is a hard one. Because if we think about it in the terms of the most recent version from 2017, 2024, we're looking at 2030 and beyond, which is really hard for me to even wrap my head around. I would like to think, fingers crossed, I would like to think that the digital access divide is better in general with all of the federal investments through the Affordable Connectivity Program. Now, I know that that is also in limbo right now with Congress to continue funding it, because it really started during the pandemic and not everyone supports continuing to fund it. But there are 52 million households in the country that all qualify for it, and about 21 million of them are signed up for that stipend right now. So there are still a lot of households that don't have that access. And so if we can continue working on that, you also see through the bipartisan infrastructure law, I have literally driven across the country in the past month or so. And so I have seen signs in multiple states now that have infrastructure things through President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law. And so we know that fiber and actual pipes and wires are being worked on across the country. Of course, we want to make sure that BibleWand is also included in that, and making sure that the companies see the incentive to go work on tribal lands to make sure that they are also connected. But I would really like to see that has advanced for the next version, so that we can do a hat tip to it and say, hey, we continue to think about this, but it's not nearly as a big a priority as it has been in the past. So I would love to think about that. I would also love to see more, I think the digital design in particular providing more ongoing professional learning and making sure that school leaders are really actually using their dollars to support teachers. I know it seemed like such a novel concept, but whether they are in-service teachers or even working with ed prep programs and making sure that pre-service teachers are also coming in ready to teach with technology and actively engaging students. So I would like to think that there may not be three divides. Maybe there will be two. Maybe things are just going to progress in some way that we don't even need to talk about it as divides. I don't know. I don't have my crystal ball, but I would really like to think that things are just going to overall improve. That's also the optimist.
Kind of like my career for people that are watching this on video. Sometimes I like my head goes out and like glances out to the sky because I'm thinking hard because this is such a hard question about like truly this crystal ball at 2030. I would imagine that we're probably continuing to deal with student mental health crises on a level that we've never dealt before.
100%.
There has to be at some point some intervention or on a nationally recognized level of how do we build in supports throughout that truly work? How do we bring in an effective conversation around social and emotional learning without weaponizing it?
Frank. Exactly. Exactly.
How do we really meet students where they are learning wise and, you know, acknowledge and try to activate their prior knowledge of wherever they come from. So for me, that's where my head is especially as we automate things with AI and all of this
100%.
Stuff. What's the world of 2030?
Ooh. I know. So wild to think about.
Oh, well, Christina, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate you the time. You know, I would say little old me because I have this small little podcast.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
I just feel like I feel really blessed to have you as a friend over these decades. And I'm so proud of everything you've been doing. So thank you for coming on the show. For anyone that wants to keep up with Christina, I'll put all of her contact details in the show notes. But really quickly, Christina, what's the one place you'd love people to reach out to you at?
You know, I have officially deleted X/Twitter. So that feels like a loss in my life, but I have moved over to LinkedIn. And so that is really one of the best ways to engage and stay connected there.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you, Christina. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to All Things Marketing and Education. If you like what you heard and want to dive deeper, you can find more episodes at leoniconsultinggroup.com/podcast. You can also continue the conversation with us on Twitter at Leoni Group or on LinkedIn. And don't forget, if you enjoyed today's show, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave a review. We're so appreciative of every single subscriber and review we get. And it helps us reach even more people that need help. So we'll see you next time on All Things Marketing and Education. Take care.